time once again for Truth About Markets on Residence 104.4 with Max and Stacy. Riot edition, Stacy.
Yeah, Max, there are riots everywhere in the markets and in the streets from, well, it used to be from Cairo to Athens. Now you have to include London and Tel Aviv. You know, in Tel Aviv, they're rioting, well, they're protesting and saying they've brought out a real live guillotine out into the streets. And they're holding up placards saying, walk like an Egyptian.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is really the wild card of the whole global insurrection against banker occupation is the Tel Aviv riots. Because I guess underneath the surface, there was a lot of discord. Apparently the wealth and income gap in Israel is the worst in the world, and the people want to get back on the kibbutz and off the Maggie's farm of Pentagon and MI6-sponsored rape and pillage.
Yeah, well, if this movement and their demands in Israel continue to build, as they seem to be, I mean, there were over 300,000 people in a population of 7 million protesting, demanding things like free healthcare, free education, and all sorts of kibbutz-like socialism. The thing that will be interesting is for all of these evangelical Christians running on extreme right-wing, warmongering Republican tickets in the next upcoming elections. You know, people like Sarah Palin, who hasn't declared herself or that she's running for president, but, you know, they wrap themselves in the flag of Israel because, not because they really like Israelis and Jewish people. It's because in their mind, they have to be, Israel has to be to the Euphrates, and then God will come down and smite them all or convert them all and things like that. But they always say that claim they love Israel. So if Israel becomes this socialist Marxist state that they claim to hate.
Yeah, yeah. Israel is screwing around with the right wing Republican narrative. You know, they've been co-opting Israel in this their religious drivel. And now, but the people of Israel themselves have got a different story to tell. So what's the right wing going to do? Well, what they'll do is they'll simply ignore it, or they'll try to position themselves as holier than the Bible. You know, the Bible, now they'll say the Bible was wrong, that actually it's their own interpretation of God that matters. And this is how you develop a cult. You know, the right wing in America is transitioning from being a fundamentalist religious zealots and fanatics to becoming an outright sect, an outright cult.
Now, the other interesting thing, if you look at these riots happening around the world in protests, is that there's a common theme, which is monopoly and oligarchy that establishes itself in all of these countries, and it's considered free market by all, you know, neocon, sort of extreme right-wing, John Bolton-esque, Paul Wolfowitz sort of, you know, guys. So whether it's in Greece or Israel or Italy, important sectors of the economy are controlled by oligarchs, like what happened in Tunisia and Egypt. Now, the unique thing is that the UK is almost the opposite in that, and it's part of the reason I would think you might have seen everybody charges the riots here with having no political meaning. They're just random looters. But look at the UK. They have outside oligarchs. You know, the British oligarchs, the royalty, you know, they own all the land and they hide out in their, you know, castles out in the countryside. But the sectors of the economy that are important, they have all these Russian oligarchs, Saudi oligarchs, Egyptian oligarchs, Libyan oligarchs, American oligarchs, Australian oligarchs. They're handed over to somebody else. So perhaps this is the Clockwork Orange-esque sort of no organized political motive.
I see what you're saying. So in other words, the targets that are the natural targets in these other countries are domestic, but these targets in the UK are foreign and difficult to articulate. in an already difficult to articulate situation. You know, the insurrections and revolutions are going to be messy. So, although I must say, 6 months ago on this show, we pointed out that the UK Uncut people that were articulating their message against Vodafone and Topshops, and they were doing so in a pretty, you know, sophisticated way by boycotting the shops and by blocking the shops and by coming up with clever sayings and mobilizing online. And they got a lot of attention, and they were interfering with the commercial activities of these companies in a way that, you know, was laudable to some degree. And so there is that group of folks that are in the UK who are putting together a resistance, the resistance movement, against the leaders. Now, the leaders chose to ignore the message from the street that was put together by the peaceful UK Uncut and others. And by ignoring them, they opened the floodgates to the riots. Now, the culpability in these riots is squarely on UK leadership, Cameron and Osborne, full stop. They created the financial apartheid. They created the financial ghettoization of the economy. They continue in the Margaret Thatcher tradition of, quote, there is no society, and they have reaped the whirlwind. And there is nothing Cameron can do. If he says he's going to shut down the social networks, Google's not going to let him shut down the social networks. Facebook is not going to let him shut down. Apple is not going to let him shut down. Do you really think he's going to go against these major corporations by shutting off their business revenues? That is never, ever, ever going to happen.
Well, also, didn't the U.S. State Department say they were creating a separate internet for countries with oppressive regimes who cut them off from social networks? Remember, they were referring to Iran and Syria and the middle, other places in the Middle East, that they obviously it wasn't going to be given to Bahrain or Saudi Arabia, but they do have a separate internet for people cut off from the internet.
Yeah, they can try to finesse their way around this communications need of the people, but it plays into now Apple Computer is the biggest corporation in the world, or, you know, vying to be. It's ahead of Exxon. They rely on the interconnectivity and the internet to power their growth. They are draconian digital rights management trolls. And Cameron is a flea on the tail of that dog. You know, he has not got any power to stop that.
You know, the other thing I want to say, you mentioned the UK Uncut and they were ignored, and the student protesters were also ignored until that erupted in violence. Of course, it also goes back to Tony Blair, when the biggest protest in UK history happened, with 3 million people marching on London to stop the war. Which is, now there's been endless war since that march in February 2003. And they were completely ignored.
Yeah, well.
And I think it was John F. Kennedy who said, if you don't allow peaceful protests, if there is no way for people to actually change or alter the course of their government as they wish it to be, then it leads to these sort of violent protests.
Yeah, the rioters are doing the dirty work. I mean, unfortunately, the leadership in the UK has completely abdicated their role as representatives of the people who elect them. And yes, Blair totally ignored the Iraq protests. He could have easily not gone into Iraq, and this outcome would have been exactly the same. That we know the dodgy dossier was cooked intelligence to justify the war, to put a lot of money into a bunch of mercenaries' pockets. Tony Blair left office to cut deals in the Mideast for BP and other oil giants, and he ignored the people. And this has been going on. It's been building. It's been quite obvious. We've been talking about it on this show for 8 years. We said this was coming. We've tracked it, you know, meticulously for 8 years, talking about the global insurrection against banker occupation, following it in other countries, asking when it would happen in the UK. And now it's happened in the UK. And we can tell you without any compunction that Blair and Cameron and Osborne have blood on their hands.
And the other thing is, it's truly remarkable that when these sort of revolutionary times arrive in such a middle class sort of country as the UK, especially one that derives its entire middle class based on property prices. There don't seem to be any jobs that actually get you into the middle class, is that they want to remove all context, I guess because the context is one in which they thrive. So though The Economist magazine, though they did an entire edition on the social unrest they saw coming, not political unrest, as the British people only seem to think that only political meaning behind a protest is worthy, but they predicted social unrest back in 2007. They did a whole, or 2008, they did a whole edition based on this. And the UK was up there high on their list. Now, one of the primary factors is poverty for social unrest. But they said that's not the only important thing. Extremes of wealth and income gap, as you see in Israel, as you see in the US, but the US is different because they have a reserve currency and can hand out food stamps to everybody. But the UK is high up there. And one of the places, the hot spots for these riots, for example, was Hackney. What do you call it? It's like desolation land. It's so ugly and awful and dangerous. I mean, you feel it's dilapidated and ugly with very bad transport. And yet property prices are the equivalent. The average apartment is $485,000 there. And it's like the worst parts of the Bronx in the 70s. And yet it costs so much there. And yet all of these poor people have to live there side by side with these people who have been given the deposits by their parents to buy these, drive up these prices. And that's one of the complaints you did hear from the protesters who did speak to journalists. They said that they couldn't afford their area, for example.
Hmm. Well, it's financial apartheid. And what we had here was a prison riot. I mean, these people have been imprisoned using financial gerrymandering and financial prison building. And this was wholly predictable. As you point out, The Economist magazine was handicapping the coming riots and trying to predict where it would happen first and how bad it would be and how do you make money on it, of course. How do you position your portfolio to cash in on the financial unrest and the financial apartheid that's ripping these societies apart. And, you know, I can't agree with you more on that point.
Yeah, I mean, so it's so bizarre because, so The Economist said the economic ingredients for social unrest are there in the UK, more so than they are in the US, more so than they are in much of Europe. And yet, when they do happen, the people are demanding for no answers. That, in fact, you can't even think of any context because that's justifying it. Mm-hmm. And yet everybody from The Economist to Gerald Celente called it as well. Last year, he said specifically it would happen in places like London.
Yeah, well, as I've said on this show many times, the whole history of political strife is between the right and the left is that the left ultimately has only recourse, and that's the guillotine. And that's ultimately the only recourse that they have. Because all of the protests that have been mounted by the left and by activists and by environmentalists get co-opted by the right using money, using fiat money, using the money that they print. So a big campaign by Greenpeace to expose oil company, rape of the land. All those images get co-opted by the oil companies in their next advertising campaign, and they're positioning themselves exactly as a thing that they are. You know, we know that they are against, and this goes on and on and on until eventually all manner of recourse is exhausted, except the guillotine. And it always, this is just the way it is. And now in Tel Aviv and Rothschild Avenue in Tel Aviv, they've erected a guillotine. I mean, this is, I predicted this, of course, very strenuously, that this is ultimately the only recourse the left has. Why, you know, we see it again here. You have an obvious global insurrection. You have an obvious connection between Tunis, Cairo, London, Athens, Dublin. But the so-called left wing, the so-called liberals out there, the so-called progressives, they disown it. They are disowning these riots and distancing themselves from these riots. Why? I mean, this is your moment. This is your moment. This is your revolution. This is the moment of truth. Why are you running away from the thing you've been working so hard for? Dennis Kucinich turned out to be a flop. Barack Obama is a joke. We've been abandoned. We've got nothing, no leadership. We're here struggling. Finally, somebody got real. Now it's time to follow through.
Well, when you talk about left and right, it does end up sounding like you're saying red team, blue team. But what you're referring to is during historical times where the whole notion of left and right started was in pre-revolutionary France. And the people who sat to the right of the chamber, just by, I don't know if it was by design or just by default, they ended up supporting the monarchy. They were the ones that were pro-monarchy. The left were the Enlightenment sort of people, the one who were for the rights of man, that men could control their own destiny. They didn't need a monarch allegedly appointed by God.
Yeah, in opposition. The opposition is on the left. You know, that's the way it is in the House of Commons, you know, I believe. To the left of the speaker at the moment is the opposition. And to the right is the dispatch box occupied by the current majority rule. But, you know, that word majority is a misnomer as well, because what you have here in the UK and around the world is minority rule, another phrase you hear from the apartheid regime, or purple rain, which is used by Cameron, or suggested now by Cameron. He will spray the protesters with purple dye so that he can track them down and abuse them. That's something used from the apartheid regime in South Africa as well. So, you know, this is shaping up to be apartheid part two. It's on a global basis. It's for the same reason, by effectively the same people. You know, the resolution, unfortunately, because there has been no response of leadership requests of the majority to respond to the inequities is as we're seeing now. And, you know, the opposition party, the Ed Miliband, you know, what's been his position in all this? I guess he's disowned the riots as well, like a coward.
Well, it's more important than that. I think it's the population itself. And I want to say there is quite a lot of outrage. The people themselves are outraged. And, you know, if I had my shop burned down, I guess I would be upset. But where was their outrage when our entire financial system was burned down by many people being harbored here in London? Whether it was Bernie Madoff who stole $60 billion from people via London. The crucial part of his operation through which he stole stuff was in Mayfair. Now, AIG stole $85 billion from the U.S. taxpayer. Where did that happen? Via Mayfair. Colonel Gaddafi stole tens of billions of dollars from his population. Where did they end up finding the money? Here in London. Russian oligarchs who are wanted in Russia for stealing billions of dollars from their country. Where are they harbored? Here in London.
Iceland.
I was just going to say, Iceland. There are warrants out for the arrest of some bankers from Iceland who stole billions of dollars from that country. Has London turned them over? No. In fact, they are known to be living in Chelsea. So, you know, why are these, just because they could afford, you know, $5,000 suits and $1,000 shoes, that these guys are allowed to loot and you know, they're celebrated here? I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, he's right. They burned down our financial system. It is our financial system. You know, they would posit it's their financial system, that they can burn down the system because they own it and we were never a part of it. That's their attitude. But you're right. It was our system that they looted and burned down starting, you know, well, post-Thatcher, but then you know, hitting a climax in the 2007-2008 period, when the utter global destruction of the infrastructure that ties together the global financial system was burnt down and looted by Wall Street. And so why nobody seems to bother with that, who are now going after petty looters and petty rioters?
Well, the fact is that collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps, all these fake derivative products are the equivalent of a brick being thrown through a shop window. Those are the tools of smash and grab. And look, I mean, they didn't just smash and grab a $10 bottle of wine. They smashed and grabbed the Parthenon, the, you know, and major sovereignty. They smashed and grabbed things that are crucial to life.
Yeah, I was just going over the our film we did in Athens. You know, some of the highlights there of the theft of the assets of the country. You know, first they get the IMF and the World Bank and all these groups to go in there. They got the Greek government, that's totally corrupt, to sign on to the quote memorandum to let the quote troika have access to all assets as part of debts that they themselves did not originate, that were thrown at them vis-a-vis all these corrupt bankers, and as a result they stole the country. Now that's right, they stole the Parthenon, they stole the electrical grid. They stole the toll system. They stole the shipping units. There was a huge smash and grab riot in Athens. The people responded to try to defend themselves from the IMF rioters, and they failed. And this happened before these events of recent days. You know, that happened before. The rape and rioting by the IMF of Dublin happened already before. It happened a couple of years ago. All these things have already happened. The events of recent days are coming after wave after wave after wave of financial theft and looting and apartheid. So this is not. And what's remarkable, again, though, what's remarkable is that the media tends to position this as coming out of nowhere and having and relating to nothing, and the left wing or liberals are completely distancing themselves from this in a foolish way, I think.
Well, you don't have to condone the rioting and breaking of things, but to try to explain and put it into the larger context that people don't wish to see because they are invested in it is, let's look at Egypt, okay, as a comparison. Now, the military that's running the country, you know, made a big to-do, you know, in July about rejecting a World Bank loan of $2 billion because they didn't want to saddle the people with these debts. It was up to the next government that is supposed to be voted in, elected in the autumn. Well, on Friday, yesterday, at the end of the day, it emerges that they accepted a loan, you know, so dumped it in the news, that they now accepted it. They rejected the $2 billion loan because they didn't want to saddle their population. But now they've accepted their $2.5 billion loan, of which $250 million is going to go to their fees of the military and the dispensers of this loan in Egypt. So it's outright bribe. Now they are invested in this system, this corrupt system. They will refuse to see the context once the riots start, once the World Bank wants to collect back this money from the population by taking their sovereignty and all of their assets. And so once you're invested in the corruption of the system,
right,
and you're in the UK, it's very much based around house prices. That's the only thing keeping most people between, you know, the street and their pretend hoping that they might be appointed a lord by some prime minister or not. So this is everything. They're invested in that, just in a rigged housing market. That's the sole investment in life and the corrupt system.
Now they've got an investment in a lot of charcoal. And I'm sure if you go down to the City of London, you could get a loan collateralized thousands of times over on your bag of charcoal that used to be your house. And unfortunately, that's the reality of the situation, that if you're a friend of the bankers, you can collateralize a bag of snot and get $1 million or $10 million. And that snot collateralized loan can be floated on the international financial markets and buried until it appears at someday in the future in somebody's pension account as worthless, and then those people have to live without, because that's the way the system works. It's one big, huge slush fund, Ponzi scheme, garbage racket put together by the mafia that is the City of London and Wall Street. And they harbor all the financial terrorists in London. It's been going on for too many years. And they hit a breaking point, as The Economist magazine predicted it would, as we predicted it would, as Gerald Celente predicted it would. We're at the snapping point. Now, these rioters, these people in London, you know, there are thousands now of people who have been tagged as rioters in this uprising. These people, you know, these are people that you have to, we have to talk to these people or deal with these people. You just can't, you know, it was Cameron just going to open a concentration camp for them and put them in a concentration camp and say, you know, these are the people that we're just going to, you know, is that his choice? Because that's the way he sounds like to me. He sounds like the Führer. He sounds like, well, these are the undesirable people. They're not monarchs. They're not graduates of Eton. Therefore, we're going to put them in a concentration camp. And I mean, that's the way he sounds.
Max, again, you always look at just the higher-ups and act as if the population itself has no power over anything. The population itself, listen to it. It's demanding these people be locked up forever. Look at California. People get locked up for 50 years, for life without parole, for stealing a slice of pizza. Three strikes, you're out. They would rather spend, in California, $45,000 per year to lock up somebody for a $1.50 crime.
Uh-huh.
For 50 years. They'd rather spend that. So they'd rather spend millions of dollars than address the context, because they are invested in the context.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And occasionally you have leadership that is able to lead in a way that is consistent with the higher principles of the political, you know, system. You know, that we have had leaders in the past that have been good leaders. Cameron is not one of them. Barack Obama is not one of them. We on the world stage, we just don't have any good leaders. Not since Mark Otten over there at the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah. Well, but you know, this goes in cycles. And at a certain point in a Ponzi scheme, it's hard to be a good leader, because really to tell them the truth at that point, when say seven.
Okay. Well, you're developing this permanent underclass. Okay.
Yeah.
So the leaders will emerge, and they'll take one of two forms. Either it'll be a Jesus type who said, give me your lepers and give me your downtrodden, and we'll create an army of love. Or it'll be like a Führer type who'll convert through propaganda and mind tricks an army of you know, lecherous stooges. So those are the two paths now. We're leaving the possibility of having any kind of reasonable society. Not since Thatcher declared that there was no society, and they went ahead and tore down, you know, 5,000 years of post-Greek political thinking in the service of cheap tchotchkes manufactured in China and financed by thugs in the city. Okay, now we're back to square one, where it could go either way, either some kind of philosophical revolution of the mind, mm-hmm. Or B, outright police state and thuggery.
Well, you can only have outright police state and thuggery, I think, in the West. You might have the Jesus sort of Messiah emerge in the Middle East, because I think in the past, you know, thousands of years ago, we had people like that emerge because everybody was poor or a peasant except for the pharaohs. Now you have the middle class, and they tend to prefer the Führer deal with the situation. And I want to read just a few comments, for example, from this story here in San Francisco. The public transport system, they shut down the internet and all communications in the BART system. Did you read about this story? It got a lot of coverage. Yeah. Well, allegedly there were planned protests that BART learned about, the Bay Area Rapid Transit Service. So what they did is the protest was supposed to be over the shooting of a man last month, which failed to materialize, but the shooting of a man last month by BART police. Okay. So they shut down all communication systems. Now, a lot of tech guys, all the boing boings and tech dirt and tech crunches of the world are shocked at this, that this is like a Mubarak sort of technique. Now, the protesters never arrived. But look at the comments. 95% of them are such as this. Here is what needs to happen to these thugs and punks who rant about rights and BS, yet have no accountability for their individual actions. They disrupt other people trying to get home from their daily work and literally hold captive ordinary people who want nothing of their antisocial behavior of protesters who are protesting being shot down without any rights by police. The police should use riot batons, water cannons, and plastic bullets to put these criminals in check. If any of these rioters are actually illegal immigrants, they need to be immediately arrested and deported out of the United States. Here's another one. And 95% of them are like this, Max. I don't like protesters. I hope they will deserve hell as a heavy price to pay for all the media garbage they are promoting. Cowardly protesters are just a menace to society, and their act of civil disobedience will not be tolerated. I would like it when Uncle Sam makes protesting an illegal activity worthy of a lengthy jail sentence. So this is the population itself. This is what they desire in a system like this, in which they are invested in the context, and that's that they believe that the debt will set them free. They believe that a McMansion will set them free, and that anybody outside that system who's not invested in that system, who tries to puncture it, or, you know, their existence is so fragile that they'll demand a Fuhrer to make sure that their house price continues to rise.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to come up with a color shirt for these people. Now, the fascists in Italy took black. They were the black shirts. The Nazis in Germany took brown. They were the brown shirts. Let's see, San Francisco, a lot of the high-tech Silicon Alley stuff. How about beige? The beige shirts, like a beige khaki outfit, the beige shirts. They can be the new shock troops of the new Google Nazis in San Francisco who are going to go to war against society.
Yeah, the American ones will wear chinos.
Yeah, these are the chino-shirted Gestapo.
Chinos are the pants. Those
chino-wearing beige shirt Gestapo. At war against civil rights. And, well, that's right. I mean, this is, unfortunately, leaders can take two shapes. They can be the leader of the beige shirts and turn the people into thugs, as we're seeing around the world now, or they can be the philosophical, moral leaders we've seen, you know, Gandhi, King, Jesus, etc. Now, I'll throw out my long-standing theory, which you know, it sounds a bit strange to some, but call it the holy dial tone. But, you know, the whole thing about social networking is that it does lay open the possibility of the emergence of a digital Christ-like figure to emerge from the digital diaspora, and it could be electronic. And I always believe that the whole arc of evolution is still very much active and dynamic, and that there's still potential within the mind to be activated electronically through this digital Christ-like figure, to quantum leap the human experience up a notch, and that you might have a quantum evolutionary leap and more of a evolution toward the id and away from the ego, because ultimately it's the ego that gets people like Cameron and Osborne to go out there pigeon-chested in the House of Commons, pounding the table about these poor lowlifes and that he himself created in his own pent-up desire to mimic the concentration camp-wielding Führer that he is.
You know, when I first met you almost 9 years ago,
yes,
that was one of the first things you talked about, was the holy dial tone. And I thought, oh my God, this guy's bonkers. But the more I see the world, the way I see science and our technology going. And once you realize, you know, no matter what, eventually the earth is toast, right? Mm. The sun's going to consume it. I think you're right in that I do see, as we are like creating our own evolution, and I think that will be into a digital sort of thing, because that's the only way we can travel the vast differences of space, is as a digital entity. Because there's no way these earthly bodies can travel to, you know, a habitable planet in another galaxy.
Well, we've already seen the quantum aspect of the network and of the digital network, you know, with like a Facebook. Here's a 26-year-old kid, Mark Zuckerberg, who in his dorm room created a $85 billion enterprise. Now, that's a quantum leap that has been, it's unprecedented. You know, that if you go back 5,000 years, that would be like one guy building the Pyramid of Giza in a week. You know, it's just unprecedented. And it's been mimicked now and copied dozens of times. There are now dozens and dozens of these things in the pipeline ready to go public on the various exchanges. They're all billion-dollar networked startups. So this, well, you know, could be applied to the moral, the moral revolution, the moral evolution of a Christ-like figure, who, and I think of, you know, Christ devoid of everything that the context of Christianity. I mean, not Christianity. I'm not talking about the Vatican, and I'm not talking about Christianity. All that is a massive corruption of the original idea, the original startup, the moral startup of 2,000 years ago was that. The idea that love, you could live on love. If you had love in your heart, all would be provided. Your food, your shelter, everything else would be there, because if you put love first. So, and that was genius, a great idea. You know, it was the equivalent of creating Facebook today. But unfortunately, it would put a lot of the warmongers out of business and the money changers. So they turned it into a message of hate, and it never survived, and we don't have any of it left anymore. It's dead. Christianity is gone. But there is that spark within the genetic makeup of humanity, and with every single individual has trillions and trillions of these genetic firing launch pads ready to be sparked with the right idea. And that idea can travel in an instant to billions of people. You know, if that idea hits the wires at any given moment and 3 billion people around the world light up with the moral recognition of a higher purpose, then you've got yourself a real interesting showdown with the forces that are tearing society apart currently.
Yeah, and there was a study out in the past week, I don't know if you saw this, that confirms exactly what history has always proven, and including 2,000 years ago when Christ said these, if you just love your neighbor, love the prostitute, love the bad guy, love the good guy, love everybody, and you'll, you know, things will be okay. Well, you know, that's because the poor and the downtrodden need to support each other.
Yeah, well, remember Cameron, when he came into office, he had the slogan, hug a hoodie. Now, to make good on it, Cameron, go down to Brixton right now and start hugging your hoodies. Or was that all just a load of codswallop? Oh, yeah, I guess you're just a scheming, duplicitous, nightmare political hack.
But I was going to say, there was a study, I don't know why they needed to do this, it's like observation will easily tell you this, but that the poor are more compassionate than the rich, that the rich will hoard wealth and the poor will often, for example, give money to a homeless person. You know, a poor person is more likely to give money to a homeless person than a rich person.
Well, money is has an anesthetizing effect.
Yeah. And it also, it clearly creates some sort of, well, like I said, you have to justify the context. So once you have to start distorting reality to provide, you know, so that your context is not harmed, like many rich well, many of these corrupt people, look at how the House of Lords operates now. All these corrupt guys get appointed by the prime minister as lord. They're called lords. And now that justifies all their previous behavior. Mm-hmm. Tony Blair becoming a consultant for J.P. Morgan.
And a Catholic, by the way.
Justifies all his previous behavior. Mm-hmm. In his mind, that justifies it. That gives it... it sanctifies it. It gives it some sort of higher meaning.
Yeah. Well, the reason the House of Lords and the upper crust in the UK is not rioting is because they live on the massive subsidies given to them vis-a-vis the corrupt financial system and the corrupt state. The people rioting, they have all this welfare, the welfare state and the subsidy state and the entitlement state that they live on, and this is why they're rioting. No, that's not true. If they were truly living off the fat of an entitlement program, they wouldn't be rioting. You know, they'd be home living off the fat of their entitlement check. But like the Ponces in Mayfair and Chelsea.
Well, look, Gerald Kaufman, for example, a very longtime Labour MP, was standing there in Parliament talking about what we should do about these looters. And, you know, he was caught writing off, cheating on his expenses, charging the taxpayer £8,600 for a Bang & Olufsen widescreen television. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, how is that not looting?
Like I said, the looters are calling the kettle black, yeah. You know, and the thing is that these people, by putting them in jail and by prosecuting them and by vilifying them, you're creating another generation of unrest. So, and whose benefit is that? Oh, the same warmongers who create the unrest and the warmongering in these foreign countries. So the UK's foreign policy, which is dictated to them by U.S. corporations, is coming home. The chickens are coming home to roost. Now, Cameron, if he were a leader, he would divorce himself from that way of thinking. He would truly hug a hoodie, and he would reach out to these people, and he would act like a statesman and a leader, not like a coward and a punk.
You know, the other thing that a lot of Brits don't seem to realize, they keep on saying that there have been no austerity measures implemented so far in those regions. There have been anyway over the past few years, but you know, Mervyn King came out this week and said that inflation will hit 5%. And this is what the Bank of England admits to. It hits 5% this year. Mm-hmm. How is that not austerity?
Financial apartheid has been going on for years. And these people are living in a prison, and that what we saw was a prison revolt. If you the idea that the austerity measures haven't even hit yet misses the point. I mean, the austerity measures that are coming will mean that another whole class of people in Britain will be rioting within 6 months. You know, the people who are pointing their fingers at these rioters and saying, "Oh, you bad, shameful people." Most of them within 6 months will be doing exactly the same thing because of these austerity measures that are being put in place by the people who figured it was easy to pick off the lowest class first, and they'll be in concentration camps, while the middle classes will be rioting on their way to the concentration camp. You know, this is, again, you forget your history. This is how you had the rise of the fascists in the 1930s in Germany, is that they ran out of money and they simply started to put their own people, you know, into camps and steal from them, steal all their money to fuel their own delusions. And this is happening in Britain.
You know, I mentioned inflation, and I was looking up some information on inflation and what previous people, in fact, I was looking for Alan Greenspan's quote on inflation being theft. Being looting. And I found a lot of information about inflation, including Ayn Rand and all. Basically, she also said that looters who break windows and steal things from a shop should be stopped by the police. But a far worse looting, she said, was inflation. And that was looting wide scale. And that the police, if they're defending that system, they need to be attacked, she said. And so it's funny that a lot of these Ayn Randians will be celebrating her, but condemning these people. The other thing I found was, thinking of the UK and US differences, is that, you know, in the Constitution, it says that no state shall create any currency that is not gold and silver. The same article also says that you should not ennoble anybody, that Congress shall never ennoble people like you have in the UK, which again creates that wealth and income gap, that you're not allowed to call somebody a lord or make them a sir or a knight, you know, in the US.
Mm-hmm.
But I found this from Paul Volcker, which I had no idea he said things like this. He said, quote, "It is a sobering fact that the prominence of central banks in this century has coincided with a general tendency towards more inflation, not less. If the overriding objective is price stability, we did better with the 19th century gold standard and passive central banks, with currency boards, or even with free banking. The truly unique power of a central bank, after all, is the power to create money. And ultimately, the power to create is the power to destroy."
Bully, bully. Yes, so true. And that's exactly what we've seen. The money printing that's gone on since the 1970s, it took, let's say, $10 of new money to create $1 of GDP growth. Now it takes you getting... The proportions are absolutely absurdly going in the opposite direction. No amount of printing is creating any GDP growth. It's just creating this hamster wheel that's exhausting people to death and forcing them into the kind of state of despair. And again, yeah, as you point out, the money printing is absolutely tragically behind it. And we don't hear anybody who is making that connection. The riots are directly related to money printing. As a matter of fact, the Von Mises Institute just put out an essay this past week making that connection, money printing and the riots. You know, they had a big essay about it, and they make the connection, and Keynesianism has failed, and it's time to get more Austrian and time to get more, you know, back to, yeah, fiat money and the British riots. It's right there. It's all there.
Yeah, I was reading it right before we came on. And that we have seen this policy massively extend of money printing, the power-hungry reach of these moronic busybody politicians into our lives, as it funded the welfare warfare state and eventually generated the terrible events of the last few days in Britain. These were fueled by the yob society generated directly out of the welfare state and stimulated by the general warfare mentality of all against all that has percolated through to everyone from trigger-happy police enforcing busybody concerns about what people freely choose to ingest into their own bodies to hoodies putting through the windows of honest, hardworking business people.
Mm-hmm. Now, they make the connection, and of course, in that school of thinking, there is this underlying, quote, libertarian school, which tends to believe that no government is best, or the smallest possible government is best. And that there's no real discussion about how you can get to that point. But the underlying theme here, by making that connection of money printing and the riots, is a good theme that should be explored at the highest levels of government. Because until the money printing stops, then the rioting will continue. There's a direct relation to it. You're financing these riots with your money printing. So until you stop printing money, expect more riots.
Yeah. So as Paul Volcker said, the central banks are creating price instability. And for some reason, a lot of people refuse to believe that is any sort of context for any of these riots. Though you've seen, you know, you've seen the Swiss franc rise 6% in one day this week and fall by 5.5% the next day. You've seen the markets up 500 points one day, down 600 points the next day, up 500 points, like up 4%, down 5%, up 6%, down 7%. These are this volatility in the system around us would have no impact on the members of that system. Mm-hmm. Is just an absurd idea.
Yeah, well, I don't get it. I don't see why they don't see the connection. Just because these people have no or little money, they assume that they're not affected. But, you know, it's like, yeah. You know, the climate is created in the stratosphere, so it doesn't affect people living on the ground. That's their theory. The rains and the hurricanes and the cyclones, it doesn't affect anybody on the ground because it's all created in the stratosphere. And these people don't live in the stratosphere, so how can it possibly affect them? And that's their thinking. They're saying, well, just because money printing happens at the Mervyn King's Bank of England, and these poor people don't know where that is, it doesn't affect them.
Or even that the Swiss franc rose by 6% one day and crashed by 5.5% the next day. We live in a British pound, and we operate in pound sterling, and we're in London. How does that impact us? It has no impact on us. And yet they don't see the ripple effects, the connection. They live in a globalized world. They go down to the shop and steal products made in China. And yet they see no sort of relevance to them by the financial system in which that globalization happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we've said on the show many times, the globalization of the global economy, principally the global financial system, up until a couple of years ago, did have the effect of rising the price of many, many, many homes in Britain. People who bought homes 10 years ago or 15 years ago, they saw the value of their home go up 400, 500, 600%. And then they were using that home as collateral to borrow additional funds. They were using their home as an ATM machine, as the saying goes. And they didn't have jobs, per se, and their economy was being gutted and outsourced and militarized, but they were still getting money out of their homes via extraction of wealth, of borrowing against it. Now, starting in 2007 and picking up speed in 2008, the financial globalized world started to crack because we hit the debt saturation point and no more Ponzi money was available. And now, 3.5 years later, we're seeing further degradation of the economy and society due to the debt saturation that peaked in 2007, along with oil. It hit the peak credit moment. And so the financialization and globalization was great on the way up, and it benefited the rich enormously, and it benefited the middle class to some degree. Now that we've gone into deglobalization and definancialization, it's still benefiting the rich, but the middle class is being wiped out. And the poor, obviously, are being extremely oppressed upon, and they're rioting.
And again, I'm going to read something from this von Mises story because, you know, the people who look at the rioters and say that they are just mindless evil, they are the embodiment of evil who erupted spontaneously from a petri dish of nothingness, that there's no cause for it, there's no context whatever for it. So here's this editorial. They're talking about how much debt, as you mentioned, that it used to take 10 pounds of new money to create 1 pound of GDP growth, and it's getting worse and worse. So he said, how far can the paper pound fall before this is all over, i.e. all these riots and chaos in the British economy? He says, I'm making no more predictions, but I jokingly predicted a few months ago that the pound would hit 1,000 pounds for an ounce of gold by Christmas 2012, if the usual 6% of deliberate annual inflation was kept going. However, I was 17 months out in that prediction. It hit that measly target in the last couple of weeks. Once it was comfortably over the 1,000-pound barrier, I suggested it might breach 1,100 by Christmas of this year. But once again, I was wrong. It took only a week. Think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, gold is now saying to the world that it has no more faith in the fiat money system.
Yes, and he goes on to say, so in 1 week, gold went from 1,000 pounds an ounce to 1,100 pounds an ounce. Mm-hmm. That's 10% of the purchasing power of your entire life's savings, and all of your pensions and all other non-real goods investments has been wiped out in 1 week due to government incompetence in its monopoly control of money, the lifeblood of civilization.
Yeah.
And yet it's these spontaneous evil people out in the slums. They're just irrational and mindless and have no context in our context.
The people rioting had the austerity measures weighed upon them now for 10 or 15 years, and they snapped and they rioted. Now, next are the people who are going to be affected by the fact that the purchasing power of the pound just dropped 10% in a week, and within a few months, those people will be rioting. And the purchasing power of the pound will continue to crash against gold. We first started talking about gold on this show. It was £200 an ounce. And this was just, 6 or 7 years ago. And we said, don't buy real estate. Fiat money system's going to crash. Buy gold. A lot of people did who listens to this show who are happy they did because they haven't been wiped out like everybody else. Now, what's the future? Well, the future is gold prices will continue to go much, much higher against the pound and every other fiat currency out there. The middle class is now next up. They'll be at the barricade soon. It'll be that at that point, it'll be more like the French Revolution because they'll have fancy liberal Guardian type writers articulating their cause. But the flames will be just as hot and the guillotine will be just as sharp.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have for this episode of The Truth About Markets.
Okay, bye, y'all.